Hello! Welcome to The Signal. I'm Victoria Brzezinski.
And I'm Hannah Vino. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. Today on the show...
I'm proud and pleased to announce a federal investment of nearly $1 million to the Halifax Regional Municipality.
The future of electric vehicles is expanding right here. Coming up, Molly McNaughton shares the latest EV advancement in Halifax.
And
a direct link to how art lives in community and how it thrives in community as well.
For the Verse Masters, the Halifax Regional Municipality is looking for a new poet laureate. Victoria Brzezinski tells us more later.
We don't want to stop there. There is more to come. That more, look, she's coming for you.
Plus later, we visit a business in Halifax that is on the move. Eunice Baga will have more. All that and more on today's show. But first, HRM is set to install 56 new electric vehicle chargers this spring. As Molly McNaughton reports, earlier this week, the federal government made the announcement at the Canada Games Centre.
I'm proud and pleased to announce a federal investment of nearly $1 million to the Halifax Regional Municipality to install 46 new Level 2 EV chargers and 10 Level 3 chargers across the city.
Julie DeBrusen is the Parliamentary Secretary in the Department of Environment and Climate Change and Energy and Natural Resources. She announced the $980,000 investment on Tuesday. The investment comes from the Natural Resources Department's EV Infrastructure Program. Canada will require all vehicles to be zero emissions by 2035.
As of this month, we've committed funding for over 43,000 chargers across the country, with more than 10,000 of these already in operation.
HRM Mayor Mike Savage says the first charging stations will be at the Canada Games Centre. Other locations include
Bedford Park and Ride, J.D. Shatford Memorial Library, Armdale Rotary, Alderney Drive, Musquodoblin Harbour Library, Cole Harbour Place, St. Margaret Centre, and Tony Mancini's driveway. That's not true. That last bit's not true.
Savage says charging infrastructure is a key feature of the city's electric vehicle strategy. This includes converting municipal fleet into electric vehicles and transitioning to electric transit buses and ferries. So far, Halifax has one electric bus. The city just ordered 60 more.
You know, from our perspective, I think this is a good step. It's a step in the right direction to start making these investments.
Thomas Arneson McNeil is a senior energy coordinator at the Ecology Action Center. He says the key is to lower the amount of wait time for EVs in Nova Scotia. The center is hopeful that this federal standard will help, but it comes with scrutiny.
The unfortunate reality, I think, when we're talking about federal funding with regard to EV charging stations in many parts of the country is that it has gone overwhelmingly federal funding to British Columbia, to Quebec, and to Ontario. Really only about 13% of federal funding for EV charging stations goes outside of those provinces. And we're 25% of the population. And so ultimately, we're receiving a disproportionately low share of federal investment in our EV charging infrastructure. And we need, you know, ultimately our fair share.
Savage says the city already invested more than $5 million in EV infrastructure. The additional federal funding will help advance the fight against climate change. For The Signal, I'm Molly McNaughton in Halifax.
Thanks, Molly. And now it's time to rhyme. Local poets now have a chance to become Halifax's new poet laureate. Victoria Brzezinski has more.
I make a big deal out of bruises, because unlike my feelings in my tiny child heart, I couldn't point to my sadness and say, you should care about me. But a bruise was perfect.
Resident storytellers and spoken word artists, it's your time to shine. The Halifax Regional Municipality is looking for nominations for its 9th Poet Laureate. The Poet Laureate serves as the municipality's ambassador for poetry, literacy, and the arts. The position is currently held by Sue Goyette. Lindsay Corey is the community developer of public art in the municipality. She runs the Poet Laureate program.
We're looking for people that have made a significant contribution to poetry or spoken word or the literary community here in Halifax.
The jury is made up of anonymous peers. The municipality works with literary groups such as the Writers' Federation of Nova Scotia.
It could look like a lot of different things, and we try to tailor the experience to the selected poet as much as possible.
Rebecca Thomas is a Mi'kmaq spoken word artist. She was a poet laureate during the 2016-2018 term.
So for me, I had a list of official duties that I had to do, which included the marking of major events in Canada and in Nova Scotia. So the Canada 150 celebrations, as well as the 100th anniversary of the Halifax explosion, as well as readings in council. So that was primarily my main roles. And then from there, I kind of got to do what it is that I wanted to do. And for me, that role was kind of continuously being the be in the bonnet of council around Indigenous needs and histories and perspectives as I saw them.
Thomas was the first Indigenous poet laureate of the city.
That was a very unique and cool spot to be in, because accessing council as an Indigenous person, I think, was a tremendous privilege. And so I kind of took those connections from the community and brought them into that space.
Corey says anyone can apply as long as you are a poet or a writer and plan to stay in the region for the next 3 years.
The poet laureate role has traditionally been really wide-reaching. In fact, there's been so much diversity amongst the individuals that have filled this role in the past that I think the next poet laureate, it's a wide open terrain for them to take it on.
Thomas says she would like to see young people take on the position.
I think the role should be continuously held by very strong opinionated young people. I think that is a refreshing thing, because you see council is often not young.
The deadline to apply is February 16. For The Signal, I'm Victoria Brzezinski in Halifax.
That was a great story, Victoria. Thanks, Hannah.
Princess Octavius is a hair care business owner in Halifax's Mulgrave Park area, and she is expanding her unique business. It offers tools and products to help people feel beautiful and confident, regardless of their hair type. Now, Princess is taking that business across the harbor. Eunice Abaga has more, and she's here now. Hi, Eunice.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What makes this business unique?
Princess is addressing the underserved needs of diverse individuals. She's offering natural hair care products and tools. So filling a gap in the market and addressing the underserved Black people in the beauty market around Halifax. Here is Princess.
We are bringing convenience. We are bringing products that in need that is very difficult to find here. We are solving two problems, convenience and availability.
That was Princess Octavius, owner of P3 Hair.
How did she get started in this business?
In an interview with her aunt, she told me the princess had a strong interest in business from a very young age.
When she was a little girl in school, and after school, come home, go do her lesson, and then take her popcorn basket, popcorn, and go sell around. And she sold many other things, not just popcorn. The only thing the mom usually say is, after all the popcorn selling in the refugee camp, see what my daughter has amounted to.
When Princess moved to Halifax, she couldn't find any extension in the area. Eventually, she started this one-of-a-kind hair and beauty shop.
It is one of the only stores here. We opened a few years ago for me initially for my need. When I moved in here, I couldn't really find a place to get any hair products that I needed. I started with the little that I had. Like, I started from home, the little $1,000 that I had, I bought my products. So what I was doing was rinse and repeat. So I do hair, and the little I said, I put it in and get the next thing that our clients need.
Again, that was Princess Octavia's owner of P3 Hair.
By the way, where did the name come from?
Here is what Princess told me.
It's actually represent me and my two kids. I'm Princess, and my kids are Promise and Prosper. So combine P3 Hair.
What do her customers say about why the business is valuable?
I spoke to customers and an employee of the business to get their insights on that.
having people who know my hair texture and my hair without having to explain so many things. But I love the variety and the kindness and the support that the staff here have. And they're very polite, they don't follow you around, but it's really nice to be able to have a position to come in and see the products right here without having to go to online places like Amazon. And the price difference is really, really favorable for everyone, even if you're a student or you're a working person. And for those African braiders or for those people who are learning about doing African hair or black people hair with the textures.
I really didn't understand what was going on and like suffering from alopecia. And when I came here, Princess, who is the proprietor of this place, she showed me some product to use. And now my hair is once again growing.
That was employee LT Fongbe. Before her, we heard from customers Anne Briscombe and Tina Marie.
Earlier, you said the business is expanding. Tell us more about that.
In 2 months, Princess will open the doors on a new shop in Dartmouth. She told me taking the business across the harbor is a big step towards reaching more people and spreading the news of beauty and confidence.
I'm not just doing this for me. I want to expand. I want to be able to solve more problems, and not just in Nova Scotia. If business is doing well, I want to go to my Moncton people because they drive here to me. So if I can solve that problem as well in the future, I'll go over there.
Princess says she's on a mission to serve all those looking for hair products and advice.
Black women, our hair is unique and beautiful and the texture of it in a way that you can style it, like, it's so rich. And I find that if you have the right things and the right tools and the proper guidance to care for your hair, you will appreciate your hair and love your hair for where you are from and who you are as a person.
Thanks for the story.
Thanks for having me.
That was Eunice Abaga. B3 Hair is located at 3260 Barrington Street.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. You can also hear us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast.
We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Victoria Brzezinski.
And I'm Hannah Vino. Still to come on the show.
I'm glad to be back at work. It beats standing outside in the rain and snow all day.
A win for unionized workers. Pete's Frutique reopens. Sobeys and the union representing Pete's workers comes to an agreement. Kate Barrio tells us more later.
Also, shining the spotlight on Halifax.
The whole thing was to get people in the community, enjoying their community, being out on the streets.
How one man is helping people discover the city in an interesting way. Kaylee Stevens has more on that.
And
we have a desperate need for more seniors' homes, and so that's what that's going to be turned into.
Once a school, now a seniors' home. Halifax Council meets to discuss the rezoning of a local property. I'll have that story later.
Pete's Frutique is finally back in business after a 7-week strike for workers' rights. The grocery store located on Dresden Row reopened its doors earlier this week. Kate Barrio has the story.
Workers at Pete's Frutique are back to work as the 7-week strike has finally come to an end. The new 3-year contract for the unionized workers meets a lot of their requests. It is also the first contract Pete's workers have received since unionizing. Diego Mendez is a communications coordinator with the union that represents Pete's workers.
The workers now will have just cause protection, seniority protections for the first time, paid sick days for the first time, which actually get paid out if they're not used. Now that they have a collective bargaining agreement, their benefit plan is protected, their vacation pay is protected, the bereavement leave is protected.
Pete's on Dresden Row has been a staple store for many Haligonians since it opened in 2004. Customers are glad to see its doors open again and to shop local. Anna Marie is a customer that has been going to Pete's since it first opened its doors.
I live in the neighborhood, and it's really our neighborhood grocery store, so it's really nice to have it back.
Terry Armour is a produce clerk at Pete's Fruitique and is glad to be back at work.
I think everybody's happy to be back to work and know that we managed to secure a contract that we were satisfied with.
Haligonians came out during the strike to show their solidarity with the cause. The workers are overwhelmed by the support from the community.
All the customers we're chatting with are like, oh, you know, it's congratulations. It's, you know, so good to see you again. We missed you. The public support continues to warm my heart this cold January day.
Union reps are ready to do what it takes to keep the store open and their workers happy. The contract is finished at the end of 2026. Plans for then are still in the works by union representatives and workers. For The Signal, I'm Kate Berrio in Halifax.
Arthur Gaudreau from Halifax Retails has been sharing updates on businesses opening and closing for quite some time. Whether people follow him on Instagram, Facebook, or X, they are sure to know which businesses are up and coming. On January 16th, Gaudreau held his first live event to mark the 13th birthday of Halifax Retails. The Signal's Kaylee Stevens was there. Hi Kaylee, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a bit more about this event.
Well, not only was Arthur Gaudreau celebrating Halifax Retail's 13th birthday, he also wanted to give the people who follow the project a chance to ask their burning questions. So, about 30 people jostled into the little auditorium of the Woodlawn Library in Dartmouth. There were two small cardboard boxes perched at the edge of the stage, full of Halifax Retail's pins and stickers that people happily collected. And right in the center, Gaudreau sat patiently, matching orange glasses, orange plaid, and all.
So how did this passion project start for him?
After a rough upbringing and avoiding his mental health for years, everything came to a head when Gaudreau was faced with a mental health crisis. Because of this, he wanted to turn his negative feelings and energy into positives. Here he is.
I wanted to reach out positively back to the community. One of the things I knew, I already sort of knew some of this stuff just through conversations with my friends and I. It was our small talk. And I decided to put it out there, and I thought, oh, maybe someday I'll have 500 followers, and it'll be all good, whatever. I wanted to show that Halifax is cool. I was hoping to help stave off the out-migration of our youth by, you know, just bringing things that, oh, this is cool, we have that here, this is there.
Again, that was Arthur Gaudreau, creator of Halifax Retails.
What's been the feedback from the community towards Halifax Retails?
Actually, Hannah, Halifax Retails has approximately 93,700 followers across Facebook, Instagram, and the platform X. So it's grown and surpassed Gaudreau's original goal of 500 followers by quite a lot. But with growth, doesn't always come positives.
It's the people who are entitled. You need to do this for me. You must do that for me. I tend to keep where I work quiet because people have used my work against me and tried to leverage it against me, and that's like so I do what they want, which is a shame.
You could really tell the audience was engaged and interested in what Gaudreau had to say. They asked him questions about which places were opening soon and which were closing. They definitely count on him for keeping them updated.
I can see that. How did Gaudreau overcome those growing pains you mentioned?
He decided not to monetize the project. Gaudreau is confident in the decisions he makes. If he wants to discuss politics, he does. He even kept his following updated during the Portapique mass shooting. In his own words, he says, I can do whatever I want.
I talk about what's opening and closing, but really what it is I stick to mostly like brick and mortar and food service and retail, because what I want is I want people to go out and visit those places. So they might be attracted by something new, but then they're going to discover that neighborhood. They're going to see something else in that neighborhood they like.
What is the best part of this project for Gaudreau?
He says the best part about running Halifax Retails is the way he's built community. Connecting people to their next favorite place to eat or shop, providing leads for food industry workers for their next job, and even keeping people who have moved away from the city connected.
The whole thing was to get people in the community, enjoying their community, being out on the streets.
So what's next for Halifax Retails?
Gaudreau plans to keep going for as long as he can. Maybe in the future, he says he'll ease up a bit from regularly posting blogs on Sundays. But for now, he's going to keep doing what he loves, bringing our community closer together.
Thank you so much for this, Kaylee.
Thanks again for having me.
That was Signal reporter Kaylee Stevens.
Still to come.
It is, it's a great painting, and it's the kind of thing I don't think we're going to see again anytime soon.
The Signal's Dylan Taylor talks to Andrew Neville about his plans to save the McDonald's mural. But first,
Hannah, did you know that in 2023, Canada recorded one of its warmest Decembers in 50 years?
Yeah, it's January. Where's the snow? What's your favorite snow memory, Victoria?
As a kid, I remember sledding with my dogs. What's yours, Hannah?
I would have to say one of my favorite memories would be building snowmen with my family. Molly and Victoria hit the streets to ask Caledonians what their best snow memory is.
What is your favorite snow memory?
It snowed last night. Honey, let's play hooky, 'cause it snowed last night.
My favorite snow memory would be when, it was about 10 years ago, I was in my backyard and we made these little snow forts. We were just having a snowball fight, throwing snowballs at each other. It snowed maybe 50 centimeters that night before. It was a really good time with me, my friends, my family.
Probably when my dad would build me igloos outside in the snow.
Probably when I was a little kid. My dad used to dig a bunch of pathways in the snow. Me and my little brother would play in it. We called it Snowtown.
My favorite snow memory is probably when I went with this girl from my class to make a snowman at the Oval. Yeah, we named him Stanley. He didn't last that long, but he was a good kid.
Ooh, favorite snow memory? Probably going skiing with my family. I think, that's gotta be the top one.
Where do you go skiing?
Sugarloaf. I think that's the best place around here.
My favorite snow memory would have to be probably going outside with my twin brother and building snow forts. And then after, we'd go inside and drink some hot chocolate, and it'd be really just a nice, memorable time.
That really made me miss the snow.
Yeah, me too. But now, it's time for a story from you, Hannah. Halifax and West Community Council held a public hearing this week. They were discussing rezoning a former school site into a new seniors' home. Hannah Vino attended the meeting to find out what people had to say.
Welcome to the Halifax and West Community Council. It's January 16th, 2024 at 6 p.m. I'm your chair, Wayne Mason. I'm going to start with a...
The Halifax and West Community Council met on Tuesday to discuss the rezoning of a vacant site. Formerly, the site was home to Holly Drive School until it was torn down in 2002. The proposal was submitted by Sunrose Land Use Consulting on behalf of Princeton Long-Term Care, Inc. They intend to turn the site into a seniors' home. The council needs to consider how compatible the institution would be in the area. District 11 Councillor Patty Cuddle initially had some concerns, but is on board with the development.
Overall, anytime you get a proposal for a large development come forward, I think you need to do your due diligence to make sure that it is compatible and that it's going to work. And in this case, I feel satisfied that for the most part, it should be a good and welcome fit.
Councillor and Chair Wayne Mason feels that this development is a necessity for the city.
So we have a desperate need for more seniors' homes, and so that's what that's going to be turned into. Every unit we build helps toward that. We have so many more people moving here than the capacity of the industry to build housing right now. We have approved more housing as a city than is being built, so we have more approvals than what they call starts in the business, and that is bad. We don't have anywhere near enough housing being built, so 128 units is great.
Four residents added their thoughts on the matter during the public hearing. While it wasn't without concern, the consensus was to approve the site. One resident added how he feels this is imperative to help the healthcare crisis and housing crisis that the city is facing.
Hi, my name is Joseph Kirby. I am a resident of Dartmouth South. And yeah, I'm reading about this long-term care facility that's going to be built with 128 beds, and it would doubly function as, you know, shared housing too, because it's long-term care. So when I look at that, I think, wow, we have a healthcare crisis and a housing crisis in the city, in the province, in the country, and I'm thinking this is a fantastic service to be able to provide to our communities.
Council motioned to rezone the area for the seniors' home. People will still have a 14-day window to appeal before the project will move on to the next steps. For The Signal, I'm Hannah Vino in Halifax. Finally, the McDonald's on Quinpool Road is closing for demolition on January 26th. Some Haligonians, such as Andrew Neville, are sad to see it go. One wall of the restaurant is covered in a massive mural depicting a summer day in the public gardens. Neville is hoping to preserve this piece of Halifax history. Dylan Taylor spoke with him.
How do you feel when you're in there? How does the mural make you feel?
I think it's cool. Like, I do think it's like a cool thing. It is strange that it's this like facsimile of the public gardens, which is a public space inside McDonald's, which is like not a public space. But it does, you know, I mean, I've lived in this neighborhood a lot in my life, and it's like McDonald's does kind of fill the role of a public space in a lot of ways. Like, we don't have a lot of those, so there's, you know, there's people that just come hang out here. And I think part of, you know, the layout and the design of this McDonald's does afford that, does allow people to hang out. And if you see some of, this is really crazy. If you look at some of the newer places, like recently renovated McDonald's, you know, there is this push for less seating, less accommodating seating, because I think they really just don't want people hanging. Like, these places now are basically like factories for delivery. They don't need people hanging out the same way. So it is, yeah, I mean, we are like, we are losing the mural, which is this beautiful and like, I think, unique thing, but we are also losing a place where, you know, people in this neighborhood do hang out. And there's like, there is a shame to that, because I would be surprised if whatever replaces this is as physically accommodating, if nothing else. I used to live about like two blocks over, and like every day I walked by here, there was a woman I'd always see just like hanging out in the front, like painting. Like, she would just come and sit down and do watercolors. That was actually the reason I really started thinking about this McDonald's like semi-seriously, or like trying to wrap my brain around it, because it was like, oh, that's, you know, for this woman who comes and paints, this is her place she goes, right? And you know, ideally that should be like a library or something, but there's not really a library around here, or like a community space, so it's like, yeah, it becomes the McDonald's. I was like, oh man, when this place closes, like, where's that lady gonna go, right?
Are you still gonna try and keep a chunk of the wall?
I actually have spoken to the developer, and they are giving me a 1 day before they tear it down to come in and salvage as much as I want. So I have 2 weeks to figure it out, because it's this is for radio, but the thing is really big. I think it's like 12 by 16 feet. It's like it's massive.
Oh wow!
So I am very frantically putting together a plan right now for removing it, and then even harder, I think, is storing it somewhere. Like, my apartment's like 300 square feet, but I will be taking it.
The whole thing?
I think I'm going to take the whole thing.
Oh my god.
I don't know how yet, but that's the plan.
All right. What's your favorite part of the mural? I mean, it's so big. What part of it really grabs your eye? Here, you can
take a look.
Look at it while you answer here.
It's a shame, because on its own, it's a great mural, but there's so many other weird features in the restaurant, like the, we're looking at them right now, these, like, fake streetlights are they're very strange. This, like, kind of gazebo structure that covers the mural. It is, it's a great painting, and it's the kind of thing I don't think we're going to see again anytime soon, so.
Yeah.
That was Dylan Taylor speaking with Andrew Neville. The McDonald's on Quinpool will close on January 26th.
That's our show for today.
Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and X at SignalHFX. On Facebook, we're The Signal Halifax.
Thanks to our social media editor, Molly McNaughton.
A shout out to our technician, Mark Pinio, in the control room.
Our audio professor is Christina Harnett. I'm Victoria Brzezinski.
And I'm Hannah Vino. We'll be back next week with more stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.